earth, sky.
The big picture that I'm trying to push is that you can't understand our brains and how we see and how we function if you don't understand what our brains are for and what they were selected for. So you've really got to take things from an evolutionary point of view and take it seriously.
You're listening to neuroscientist Mark Changizi of 2AI Labs, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Changizi is the author of The Vision Revolution, in which he examines the origin of four areas of human vision: color, illusions, reading, and binocular vision. Dr. Changizi spoke with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar.
Dr. Changizi, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
Glad to be here.
Why do we see in color? Tell us what you found in your research.
All right, well, so it's always useful to back up here and say that your dog doesn't see in color in the same sense as do we. It can see blue-yellow differences, and it can see grayscale, kind of black-white differences. Same for horses and all the other mammals. They only get those two dimensions of color, whereas some of us primates have a third new extra dimension that none of the other mammals avail themselves of. And for 100 years, the standard story for why we have them is that it helps primates find fruit or leaves in the forest. Another viewpoint has actually been that it's not for any good reason at all, but there was some mutation maybe tens of millions of years ago, and it just got stuck, and we have it for no good reason at all. One of the things that I had noticed here that pushed me in this direction was that the faces that we see, one of the most important things in our lives is other people's faces and the skin on those faces. And yet skin of the people that are typically around you is very hard to describe the color of. People from some other ethnicity that you're not familiar with, it's typically easy for any ethnicity to name that color. But one's own ethnicity, people have a difficulty to describe. And it's the same thing we find in accent, for example. One's own accent sounds accentless, but other people of a different accent sound accented, and of course they think the exact opposite. This is exactly what you expect when your brain adapts and puts your own accent or color at baseline, and then everybody else's that's far away from yours, you can't distinguish those differences very well, and they all seem qualitatively accented or colored, but your own seems qualitatively uncolored. It's a sign that the brain really cares about seeing the small differences. So, and the small differences that happen on our faces are the small color modulations, which tell you a lot about what's going on in that, whether they're blanching or blushing, and you can discern a lot about what's going on in their brain, what their mood is, what their state is, what their health is, what their current emotion is. And so I started to say, well, that seems to be an important thing. We know that primates do this. Could it actually be that our peculiar kind of color vision that we primates have, this new cone that we evolved that allowed us a special extra sense, could it in fact be optimized for seeing these emotions? Could it be like an empath sense? And as I looked into it, I was able to work out on the basis of the oxygenation of hemoglobin that underlies these color changes in your skin. You say, what would our cones have to be like to be able to sense the oxygenation, deoxygenation of hemoglobin? And it turns out you have to have a really peculiar kind of color vision, one where you have a new cone that's almost just like our ancestral sort of mammalian cone, one of these mammalian cones. It's almost in the same spot, but a little shifted over. It's not a very good design if you were an engineer building a camera, and cameras are nothing like this. And that's why people thought it was an accident that our eyes are like this. But no, you have to have cones like that peculiar way, in order to sense the spectral changes that happen on the skin. In order to see the emotions of others, you have to have that funny kind of color vision that we have.
This function of being able to see colors is one question that you explored in The Vision Revolution. And another one is looking at why our eyes face forward instead of perhaps what some people might wish, like me. Sometimes I wish I had an eye in the back of my head. I could see what's going on back there.
The basic design for most animals is to have eyes on the sides of your head, not on the back. But by having eyes on the opposite sides of your head, like a bunny rabbit, say, you actually can see directly behind you and above you and in front of you. And they have typically a very small binocular region. That means that both eyes can see out in front of them. And they do get stereo or 3D vision there. And amongst just some of us mammals, you find that there's more and more forward-facing eyes where they lose the ability to see behind them altogether, and they have a wider binocular region or a wider region that both eyes can see. And for, again, one of these 100-year-long stories, there's a variety of kinds of arguments for why some of us mammals have these forward-facing eyes. They typically have the stories have something to do with 3D vision. There's better, that now you have a wider field in front where you have this good special stereo vision that we like to, you know, when we like to gaze through these pictures and see the stereo pop out. Now, the problem with those kinds of arguments, there's a number of problems, but one of them is just sort of a theory problem, and it's just, well, why would more 3D out front be worth the cost of not being able to see anything at all behind you? Why would you ever want that? You can't. You're just blind behind you. And so I started thinking, well, I would like, you know, I had this intuition that eyes are situated on the head facing forward or facing sideways just to do one thing, to maximize how much the animal can see, period. There's just one thing, see the most. And it turns out that when you, everybody has seen this kind of thing before. If you hold up your finger vertically in front of your face and you look beyond your finger, you'll see two copies of your finger, right? And you'll perceive, unless you have a dominant eye, you will have noticed this since you were a kid, you'll see two copies of your finger and they'll be rendered transparently. If you hold up your entire, all of your fingers in front of your eye, you'll see sort of copies of your hand, two copies of your hand rendered transparently, and yet you'll see, you'll almost miss none of the scene beyond. That takes special mechanisms, special peeking mechanisms in some sense. Here's another thing. Keep both eyes open, but put one hand over one of your eyes. Keep, again, both eyes open. You'll see a transparent hand through which you're seeing the world beyond. Notice that you're not seeing a world through which you're seeing a transparent, a world through which you're seeing it transparently to see a hand beyond. As one eye is getting hand, one eye is getting world. Why aren't you seeing a world transparently rendered through which you see a hand? How does your brain know to put one behind the other? It's just the eyes are getting completely different things. So it turns out that the brain, the typical story for 3D, for stereo vision was all about two eyes are in different places on your head and you see the exact same thing on the world and then you can work out how far it is by sort of triangulating. But I'm turning this story on its head. Instead, by having two eyes in different positions, it allows you to see past clutter, like your fingers in front of you, and each eye ends up with very different views beyond the clutter. In fact, with not anything similar about them. But what your brain is good at is putting those puzzle pieces together to create a single unified image of what's beyond that layer of clutter. And it turns out when this kicks in, this capability, is when your eyes are more widely separated than the clutter, than the leaves that might be out in front of you. So the idea was that could it be that forward-facing eyes have evolved to tap into that? And when it would pay off is when you're a big animal with eyes that are widely separated relative to leaves and you're in a forest. So animals, and the fundamental prediction was that if you're an animal in the plains, you should have sideways-facing eyes no matter whether you're small or large. But if you're an animal in the forest, if you're small in the forest, you should just have sideways-facing eyes still because your eyes are so close together on your head you can't see past leaves. It would be like us trying to see around a Winnebago. But when you get bigger and bigger in the forest, your eyes become this X-ray power, this power to see past your own fingers, so to speak. I use it as a metaphor. Suddenly kicks in, the math changes, and it becomes, you can see the most in your forested environment when you actually have eyes facing forward. Because just you see so much beyond that layer of clutter out front by virtue of having two eyes looking in that direction that it outweighs the fact that you're blind behind. So it turned out that these predictions held up across hundreds of mammals, hundreds of species across the mammalian, all mammals. So it seems that forward-facing eyes are for seeing better in forests, in sideways-facing eyes. It's always your eye position is optimized to allow you to see the most, given that you've got two eyes. It doesn't have anything to do with stereo vision or 3D. Or predators, or it's just see the most in the environment that you're in.
You've been listening to neuroscientist Mark Chinghizi, professor of human cognition at 2AI Labs. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Lindsay Patterson. Earthsky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.